Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Board Gamer. This one's a bit of a special one for us as we got to chat with the guys from Uxorthorpe, all about their upcoming game, Singularity. We hope you enjoy it.
We're here with Uxorthorpe Games, and firstly, I thought we could make a start by going around and just asking each one on what they do at Uxorthorpe and kind of how they got into that role in Uxorthorpe, and just letting the audience know a little bit more about you. I thought perhaps, Lance, as I've been talking to you mostly, should we start with you?
Hey, everybody, I'm Lance. I got into Uxorthorpe. So first, I primarily do, I mean, we're a super small team. So the real answer is we all do a little bit of everything. For myself, I do a lot of production, narrative, and then when I first started, a good amount of design. But that's definitely come off the reins a little bit as we kind of have other needs. So how did I join Uxorthorpe? When I was in high school, I just randomly happened to, this is going to be an interesting segue because I'm probably the most junior member of the team. So when I was in high school, I ended up interning with Uxorthorpe on this really tiny mobile game project. At the time, as I'm sure Logan and Matt will get into, they were just working with some high school interns as they pursued a grant. And we did some good work, and then later when I actually went to college and ran into them again, we started working together, and I was just like, hey, Matt, can I do some narrative for you? And then the needs kind of shifted, and it turned into design, and the rest is kind of history. So I joined, I interned back in 2017, but joined in full force in 2019, and I've been there ever since.
Nice. I'm glad we started with you then, so we get to hear like what it's like to join Uxorthorpe. So we're going to work our way up then, I guess, from there. But that's really cool, getting a little bit of back history there. Thanks for that. So I figured then we could go over to Logan. If you could give everyone a little bit of a rundown on who you are, how you got involved, and everything Uxorthorpe to do with
for
you.
Sure. And thanks again so much for having us. It's really, really, really great to be here. I'm excited for this dialogue. So my name is Logan. I'm a breakdancing game designer. I've been making games since I was, oh gosh, like 10 years old. It's really like my lifelong passion. I love it. The journey began when I was actually a student in one of Matt's classes at the University of Utah. Him and I got connected. He was teaching an amazing class on like the history of games. And so Matt and I just hit it off, and he was helping me on some stuff at the time. And then, you know, next thing we knew, he was telling me about Uxorthorpe, and I'll let him go more into kind of talking about the founding and stuff of that. But we then started working together that following summer. So that was like, oh gosh, summer of 2016, something like that. We started working on, right, beginning on Singularity. And Singularity was very, very, very different at the time. I'll let him kind of go more into the background on that. But it was really the beginning of this epic. And so now at Uxorthorpe, because we're a small team, right, I wear many hats. My background is primarily, like I said, like in game design, game development, so spent a lot of time doing that. I've always been a big card gamer and board gamer, but I also help with marketing, business development, you know, making sure, catching balls and all that stuff. So it's been a great journey and an absolute pleasure.
So Matt, can we hear from you?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Matt Anderson, and I was one of the like original founding members of Uxorthorpe. Uxorthorpe is an interesting little company because it's changed ownership quite a bit over the years, and it's done a bunch of different things. I mean, it primarily started as a little bit of a spin-off of a group of people who were interested in working together at the university and just doing like video game development and kind of a contract capacity along various fronts and doing projects together. So it was a little informal, but we were kind of just enjoyed working with each other. And I think we'd all been in larger game development capacities and preferred kind of small team settings, you know, where you have a lot of creative agency and you're working just very directly with people that you really enjoy working with, right? And so Octothorpe, the people in Octothorpe all met kind of loosely through the University of Utah. So I'm a professor in the Division of Games there, and one of our other founding members, Al, who's not with us today, was also a professor at the time. We just got so lucky to have the most amazing students in the world. So we all got together, we just started making games together, and that's what it kind of boiled down to. But Singularity is an especially odd duck in that mix, because Octothorpe was originally doing lots of video game contract work, VR contract work. Singularity has its roots back when I worked for Weird Miniatures a long time ago. So in the early 2010s, I was working for Weird Miniatures on Malifaux and some of their other properties. And I pitched an idea that was kind of loosely based on this IP and this kind of gameplay structure to them. And they really liked it and brought it on board. And that fell apart for a few reasons that weren't entirely Singularity related, but were kind of business strategy related. So later on, Octothorpe ended up buying a lot of the IP and assets to that property and then reforming it in some significant ways. So very little is left from that original vision of the product, but the core idea has been kind of, I don't know, through 10,000 iterations over like a decade. So, but anyway, so we're really lucky to be here now, though, and I think it's stronger than it's ever been because of the team that kind of coalesced around it in the end.
So I thought to start with like the main first question that we really wanted to know, especially because like as it is stands right now, Singularity has got over $200,000 of backing. It's going ahead. I'm gonna hopefully say it's going ahead. it looks like it's absolutely smashing it on GameFound at the moment. Where did the inspiration come from for Singularity?
I guess speaking to kind of my like personally for me and Lance, I'm, you know, I mean, feel free to jump in here too, is that I've I really like board games. I grew up actually really enjoying like deterministic style games. So I played a lot of chess as a kid and still love to play chess. And something that has always deeply frustrated me about a lot of games, a lot of competitive card games, is the randomness. And that's right, a huge cornerstone of Singularity is we've designed out that randomness. It's right, it's a great competitive experience. And so it's one of those things where it's kind of like, you know, I always think of it as that we're solving for a problem that we've all experienced and relate to. So
to add on to that, I mean, it's, you know, there's kind of the universe of Singularity, which is has been iterated on so much over 10 years, it's tough to tell where things get added in. But I think everybody loves this idea of this future setting where, you know, we kind of have this cultural crossroads of a bunch of different kind of modern day and historical cultures that are kind of brought together in a futuristic kind of context, and one that doesn't feel traditionally like just hard science fiction or kind of grim dark cyberpunk, but something that has that futuristic space to kind of take new ungrounded, I want to say, approaches to looking at those different kind of cultures. So that's pretty cool. But in terms of the design, it's kind of the other half, and that's an interesting one, right? Because I remember I had this experience where I adore Magic the Gathering. I still play it, and I've played it for 30 years. I jumped in and like revised slightly before that. So, but I had this draft experience where I was just absolutely crushing it, and then in the final game I just got absolutely mana flooded, and it was terrible. I drew like 5 lands in a row and got blown out in the last match of this, you know, semi high profile limited event, and I just had like a kind of a question start to form, which was, you know, is there a possibility that this same type of deck construction and fun factor and personal expression through deck creation could exist, but without, you know, kind of the noise of randomness? So you could still have a meaningful competitive exchange with someone and still get creative in terms of how you approach that problem, but not be subject to these kind of wildly unfun occasional game states that randomness puts you in, right? What I was going to say is that it just made an interesting question. It's like there are lots of TCGs and they all solve different interesting issues. I think the randomness in them is part of what makes them fun, but it's just kind of an interesting experimental question, right? Like, could a TCG exist with absolutely no random elements, right? And so Singularity has a lot of design tricks it uses to have it not turn into chess, right? You don't have perfect information, and so you can't really leverage, you know, deep kind of future turn calculation and state memorization to succeed in it in the same way you can chess, which is a lot of the reason why that like turns people off to chess, right? Or similar games that kind of have those design motifs. So Singularity feels like a random card game because you don't know what your opponent's bringing to the table and you don't know what to expect turn to turn, and you have to really be responsive in the moment. But there's no decision point in Singularity where you can say, oh, well, randomness won that game or lost that game for me. It's always about what you decide to bring to the conflict and how you utilize it in the conflict, but your conflicts are never won or lost due to something that wasn't out of your direct control, either in an anticipatory fashion or in a responsive fashion. So surprise, surprise, like making that type of game, I think, ended up being way more difficult and way more time intensive and took a lot more problem solving than I think any of us thought it would. It kind of ended up being just a hobby project, a passion over years. You know, we just kind of like tinker with this thing and then do like some contract VR work. And then I'd be like, let's get back to this and kind of like, you know, tweak it some more. And it took a lot of cycles of really evaluating how it was working and carefully balancing things. I mean, an interesting quality of randomness is that you have nothing to hide behind if your balance doesn't work, right? If a deck is broken, it's going to be broken 100% of the time, every time. There's no like, oh, this player might just draw lands and then it'll be okay. The level of diligence and the kind of the infrastructure that has to go into making sure that the game isn't inherently 100% broken out of the box was a major challenge. So that's, I think, I guess to circle back to your question, sorry for spending 20 minutes on question one, but I think it was a fun challenge for all of us to like figure out how to put together this design space that hadn't been explored and also felt at various points kind of impossible, you know, like, That was a lot of fun. I think that's what kept us in the game, kind of, was just the interesting challenge of it all. And, you know, having an excuse to work with artists that make beautiful art always helps too.
This is true. In fact, it's so interesting that when you started talking about the challenge of making a card game that isn't broken out of the box, because that was literally something we were talking about the other day. Especially Matt, you were talking about how, you know, sometimes if a game is digital, they can just tweak it, you know, but to make sure that something is play tested enough that it's not just permanently broken, you know, and how are you going to fix that? you know, that is a challenge.
It's tricky too, because our game's deterministic, you know, if you create this like really broken card in the game with randomness, well, at the very least, like you might not draw it every game. But in Singularity, you can always have a card in a program every single time, right when you want it. So it's certainly been a huge focus for us.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean that I would say, and this is, it's interesting because all of us have been in games for a while and have experience with games, and I've worked in them in a bunch of capacities, but I can pretty solidly say Singularity by necessity, just because we don't want to ship something broken, has received more playtesting than I think any game I've ever worked on, like AAA, AA, tabletop, period, just because it's just that much of a monster that we created, I think, for better and worse. But yeah, I think we did get it to that point, though. It's not broken out of the box. I think you can do just about anything with it and have a really exciting competitive space, but there's not that silver bullet that solves it. And there are a bunch of things that go into that. There are kind of some soft rock, paper, scissors systems in there where, you know, every single line has kind of a soft counter that can be explored, and on and on and on. But it's in a really good place. I think it landed. But yeah, I mean, with tabletop games, like, you get one shot, you know, you can publish errata, you can release a second edition, but also kind of just the product cycle that tabletop games go through, right? Like, if someone signs onto a live service game, like early access on Steam in a video game format, they're expecting, okay, I'm starting a journey, and then I'm going to go with the developers on this journey, and they're going to patch it, and it's going to get better and grow over time, and it's going to be a feedback process. With card games, and tabletop games in particular, I think card games are closer to that than other tabletop games, but there's kind of an idea that, like, this is a done product, you know, like, this is supposed to, it's almost like we're making, like, video games were in the 1990s, right? it's true, that's a challenge, and I think because of how we design Singularity, we're especially susceptible to being broken, right? I mean, that's just kind of how the game functions, so we had to really have our hand on our gun, as it were. Like, I don't know. It has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of playtesting across hundreds of people.
And that's, you know, that's a relief for the people that are, like, looking to back it as well. Because sometimes it feels like that. I mean, I'm a sucker for GameFound. I will probably peruse GameFound all the time. And as soon as I saw, like, Singularity, I think I saw it right from the start. I was like, yes, I'm following that. That looks sick. But then there's always the wonder of, like, you know, is it going to work? But hearing that, especially for everyone that's going to be hearing this now, that's going to be a relief for so many of your backers to know how much playtesting it's had, that they haven't risked their money on something that hasn't had enough rigorous testing.
It makes me really happy to hear. I mean, I think we wanted to ensure before we actually did a campaign that the game was pretty much done, you know, because I think all of us, as, like, you know, funding enthusiasts, have had games that have gone 3 years late, and we've had games that clearly, like, were a cool vision, but then they didn't really get into proper development until after the fund, and then it turned out they couldn't really execute the vision, so you end up with something that just feels kind of janky and not fun to play. And I think for us, because, you know, we were kind of in a little bit of a luxury position where this is, like, kind of a hobby project for us, we wanted to get it right, you know. It was more about, can we do this right, rather than we need to bring in this amount of money to survive, you know. And so I hope that'll serve all the people who are going to enjoy the game well, you know. It really was wrung out before we started the campaign, and really I would say during the campaign the only big X factors were, we're still tuning co-op a little bit, but that's starting to feel like it's just about ready, pretty close. And then
I backed the co-op one.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, you know, co-op is a whole layer of weird complexity on top of the no randomness complexity, right? And for spoilers, like, the co-op element does use a good amount of randomness. The players don't bring that, but the engine has to, you know. It's how else are you gonna simulate dynamic actions, you know. But that's starting to be pretty good. And then other than that, we're just getting the last few pieces of art in. But we have such wonderful artists that's kind of like a well-oiled machine, you know. I mean, they're really good timelines that are assigned to how things work, and they're very good at getting the artwork out. So that was something that we could kind of ascribe to a timeline. But really, I mean, right now we're just kind of just polishing off the rough edges. We're still tooling with the packaging and stuff just because we have a little bit of time to, but that's another thing we wanted to do. We didn't want to be 3 years late, you know. We're gonna try to stick this in November, like we said. We're gonna try to stick the landing, and all signs look good.
When I saw that you did, like, the whole Scorpion box, I was like, wow, they're really being a bit ambitious with this.
I'd let Al speak to that. Al, we'll just go off in Maya and You know, actually, though, that was kind of partly our partners at Panda too. We have just this wonderful product manager there, Joao, who is just his experience having worked on a jillion different tabletop games is just vast. And he'd often come to us and say, like, you know, I love your guys' product. The gameplay is so cool. I just think this is straight fire. Would you guys like mind if I tried and to like help you kind of work through some of the product design of this? And we were like, oh my god, Joao, please, you are team member number 6 officially. You're now an Octothorpe employee by name at the very least, and we'll steal you from Panda if we can. But in all seriousness, like, he was so helpful. And that Scorpion Box lid, that detachable lid, was something he brought up. He said, hey, we can do something really cool here. Worked out well. And the two level design, it's a really cool box. It's the box that I've always wanted for a card game, so that feels good.
I'm a sucker for big boxes, especially like anyone knows that if you look at my shelf amongst all the gamers, mine's the shelf that's got the big fat boxes. So you know, like, I love it, like Nemesis, and think, oh, is that it? And then you lift it, it's like, no, there's more. Like, you know, I love it, you know. So I could see why that would definitely be a cool thing to implement, even just in the packaging element. You know, I mean, you smashed out a game with Tim, I think, last night, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
How did you find it?
I loved it. It's the first time. I mean, I'm pretty new into like the whole TCG thing, and I've mainly played mobile, like Hearthstone and a bit of Marvel Snap. What's the other Marvel one that's just come out? Unlimited.
Oh yeah,
we played that last month, and that I mean, you've got so many cards. You've got that quite. It's all about getting the big guys out. That's the whole point of it. And it's the same that we had with Star Wars Unlimited as well. Like, you just want to get Darth Vader out, really, if you're playing that side. And we played yesterday, and
who did you play with in that? Who was your characters? Do you remember?
I played the Anarchy of Boom, and actually, I was gonna ask what do you think would be a good strategy for like your first game? I went in, and I'd read the rules, I'd watched a playthrough and stuff, and I was like, before I go into a game, I quite like getting a strategy in my head, and my strategy was to add armor and then take it off to start using that to attack. I lost, so clearly it didn't work. But yeah, my question would be, how would you approach your first game with that faction?
No, it's such a fascinating question, because that is the strategy. You nailed it, absolutely. Do you know who you were playing against?
It was the two starter ones that are on TGS. Oh,
the Shogunate, yeah. So two interesting things to that point. One of them is that our starter decks are getting a little bit of a tune-up to be more straightforward before launch, because right now they're a little bit on the complicated side. And so those starter decks that you played with will be changed by just a few small degrees by the time the game is out. We're also going to have a couple page spread in the manual that talks about playing each of the starter decks and what like strategies and lines kind of work, so you can kind of go into it figuring it out. But right now, for the Monarchy of Boom, you nailed the strategy, I think. So you know exactly what you need to do. The sequencing in that deck as it is a little bit complicated. So you need to know which pieces you need to protect and what order kind of things need to come out in. And that deck as it is now is a little less forgiving in terms of like doing something a little bit earlier or bringing a character out a little earlier and a little earlier. So I guess like I wouldn't ascribe a loss to any like mistake of strategy. You're doing exactly the right thing. Fact of the matter is the Shogunate deck is just terrifying and a little
yeah, that's funny.
You're totally good.
I think I let Tonkor die too soon. Crash, sorry. And he was the one that I was kind of getting the most joy with.
I think you nailed it. Tonkor is such a workhorse in that deck. Like, he's your like big time, just get it done damage dealer, you know. Everybody else can kind of leverage armor, and there's some nice combo lines with like swapping in Oni Baba and using a force field of boom to get 10 armor and then defragging that all off with Scrapper and getting a one hit kill and stuff. But when it gets right down to just like putting out consistent damage, you kind of need Tonkor on board. Like he's gotta be a major pipeline for killing the opponent. So, and I say that because I've had so many games that went that exact same way. You know, it's like opponent knows that Tonkor is a problem, pulls out a quick 3-turn combo, eliminates him, and then I'm left kind of trying to juggle what's left over, which is not quite enough. You know, so. Yeah, but that's the good fun of it, right? I mean, the interesting thing is that even if two decks are constructed the exact same way, if they play each other over and over again, the games get more interesting as they come to understand each other, right? Because you go into the next game thinking, okay, I need Tonkor now. And your opponent goes into it thinking, okay, I took out Tonkor and that worked. And that creates a whole new dynamic and a whole new line of actions that creates a whole new kind of outcome. And it's interesting for the Monarchy deck, fighting the Shogunate deck, I mean, you've got to understand where their key pieces are too, you know, and you gotta nuke Shred, and you've got to nuke Kagemusha, you got to nuke Satellite, you know. You can just kind of leave Shiho and Miko alone. They'll just kind of like dirtle on their own. That's, you know, I mean, they're important pieces, but they're not like kill on sight. This is a red alert, it needs to happen. So yeah, anyways, I guess that's a long way to sum up. You were absolutely doing the right thing and playing just a little bit more of a nuanced deck, I think.
Hey, yeah. Man, not bad getting praise from the creator himself.
No, it was a lot of fun. And it was good because afterwards I was like, you know what, next go, I know exactly how I'd play this.
Well, and one last thing. And, you know, we won't get too off in the weeds because I don't know if all of the game content specific talk is going to be translatable to someone just listening to this, but Blizztron, you know, he comes out and suspends a character, hitting that at just the right time, his ambush, so you swap him in and suspend a character, that the timing of that can win or lose a game for sure. You know, there are times when he can come out and just completely ruin the next person's turn and just destroy their tempo. But you kind of need to have a little bit of experience with the other side of the board to know exactly when that's going to happen, right? Like that gotcha moment. And so that's another thing that's kind of being changed in that deck. But anyways, yeah, so that's the thing, you know, you play it again. That's one thing that I really enjoy about Singularity. I'd be curious to hear what you two think, Lance and Logan, but I get so much joy out of playing the same deck over and over because I feel like I really learn new things every time. I have like decks that I built like 3 years ago and I still love pulling them out and figuring out kind of new ways they can respond to situations and new challenges that they can kind of address that I never even thought. Pretty fun.
Yeah, well, and that's something, this ties into what we talked about earlier too on just like the rock, paper, scissors mechanics, is I'm super, super proud of how we've built the counterplay in this game. That is, and that's when people ask me, are like, Logan, doesn't it get stale? Like what, like it, like they, right. That's a, I buy a dollar for every friend who's asked me that. It's like, no, it doesn't, because you have such good counterplay and it's so dynamic based on, right, you remove this character from this equation. Okay, now I have to really look at the board state, right, reset my whole frame of reference. And so it's super fun to play decks that you haven't played in a long time because you then notice new things and just the way you're able to use cards and like kind of like multi-purpose, like, oh, this is, I never even saw this combination that actually really helps me, but I never would have gotten to that had I not, right, revisited, lost a specific character, gone through all these actions to get there. And that's just something that's really fun to discover. What about you, Lance?
for myself, I think it's, yeah, the strategy of Singularity is great. I always joke that I'm really bad at Singularity, which is just funny because I work on the team. Like, I'm a master at creating a really complicated engine that has no payoff. That's the running joke on our design team.
You sound just so much like me.
It's totally bad. And so I have a ton of fun just trying to create really weird combinations of things, which I think has been really useful when we look to some of our designs, especially for our expansions, where we're more willing to take even bigger risks in terms of like weird counterplay or different stuff. So, I mean, taking a patch or a card you're going to put on one of your characters and just for fun, trying to put it on somebody else's to see what wacky shenanigans will occur. I think that's been a super fun part of the design process and definitely informs the strategy in that regard.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, this has got me interested to think then, because you've obviously had to play just countless amounts and tweak things and tweak things and tweak things. What have been some of the like challenges that you found throughout the production period of making Singularity?
Because we were kind of trying to do something that hasn't really been done, there weren't good templates or answers, so I felt like the amount of iteration we had to do was pretty monstrous and intense. And I don't know, you know, Logan, I think Logan, you solved a really nice problem that happened early, in that we had a bunch of cards and a core gameplay loop that was really fun, but just balancing things as a result of playtesting wasn't quite enough, right? So Logan put together one of the very first kind of frameworks for how the kind of math of Singularity could work from a back end, like an infrastructure and framework from which cards could kind of be developed, and that anchored a lot of the design in some really nice ways. And so this is the type of game where you cannot balance it through playtesting alone, right? There has to be a strong infrastructure that's kind of forward guiding content creation, because the system's just too complicated otherwise. Like, something's going to slip through the net and then you're going to have a broken game. So that was a big coup, I think. Good on you, Logan. One of the big problems, and Lance has been instrumental in this, Logan's been instrumental in this, is that because this idea, and this is off of design and now on Universe, because this idea came from another IP that was a little bit different in terms of what it was trying to achieve, getting the narrative and universe and background and feel of Singularity right has been a constant struggle over a very long period of time. Like, how does this universe operate? How much exposition do we include about this universe? Do we just kind of present it as a bunch of art pieces with some very loosely associated narrative to just have an excuse to have beautiful art on cards? Or like, do we go deep and make like a TTRPG's worth of like lore here so we can how do the themes of the factions work, and why is so an interesting thing about Singularity is that it used to be entirely a co-op game way back in the day, and it was these four factions who are kind of ideologically opposed but all unified against one enemy called the Glitch. And then it got reworked into a PvP game, and none of the lore made sense because there's no reason for all these factions to be fighting each other in a PvP sense. So I won't say it was an incredible challenge, but just a massive amount of work of trying to figure out how this universe makes sense given it was adapted from something else. I don't know, it's that, just when I think back to like constant problem, that was one of the biggies. I don't know, what about you guys, Lance, Logan?
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on co-op, at least our initial concepts, because we touched on how it has randomness and stuff. But when we first concepted co-op, we actually didn't want there to be randomness. We were really gung-ho about trying to maintain the deterministic aspect, even with co-op. And that was so difficult. Like, to create a AI automaton where the players who were all teamed up knew exactly how it was going to execute, was so difficult. Like, we went through so many iterations. We actually built a game mode very similar to Magic the Gathering's like Arch Enemy, where we gave one player a super powerful deck and tried to change co-op into kind of just like a 1v3 or something like that. So I think especially early on in our iterations there with alternative game modes, that was a really tough design challenge, definitely.
I was just thinking, I'd imagine that there would probably have been times, I don't know, did you ever find like you came to a roadblock and you're just thinking, is this idea going to work? Maybe we need to scrap it, like, or we need to really rework something. Did you ever find you came to those sorts of roadblocks?
I think there are like macro roadblocks like that, like entire game directions, like that arch enemy idea and the rest. There are also just like small content roadblocks. I, for the longest time, thought we were going to scrap Masquerade, which is one of our expansions. That expansion was originally in the core game, and after like a couple of years of playing with it in iteration, it never really worked and never really made sense, was too complicated. And we went over this idea. So Masquerade, it's a brand that operates around putting bad programs in an enemy's stack, right? So you're basically like putting programs under their stacks, and then as they get to them, terrible things happen. And that breaks so many fundamental rules of the game, or like creates so many like corner case erratas for how things should work, or like, oh, well, this is a really fun mechanic, but what happens in this particular scenario? And you're just like, I don't know, that's terrible. You're right, I have no idea. We need a whole new page in the rule book to just define that one little thing. So we finally got it there, but I guess there was probably a good 6 months where I was just like, this idea has to die. Like it's just not going to work. And then we finally just somehow fiddled with it enough that it kind of fell into place, you know? But I feel like there were lots of those scenarios that they're kind of, I don't know, just didn't seem like they were ever going to come together. Can you think of any, Logan?
Yeah, I think there's, I still think that, to your point, like the some of the narrative stuff and finagling, there were times that it was just like, how is this gonna ever make any sense?
Why are we doing a 20th meeting on this? Well, we
I think there were definitely like certain mechanics over the years that it was just like, oh, I want this card to work this certain way, and it was just I just had to come to terms with like, Logan, it's okay. This just isn't, it needs to change. This isn't going to happen no matter how attached I get. I have so many memories of waking up early to cut paper for paper prototypes on Sunday mornings. That is maybe my greatest roadblock, is that you can always be faster at cutting like 1,000 cards. Like that's impossible. Like you're going to play test with, you know, 25 people and you got to cut all the cards.
You know, this is a beautiful thing that people get to see. This is the reality of what it means
it's
to
true.
Work on the
I
game.
Have so many memories of like Matt coming down, we're getting up and Lance, and like we're just like, we got to cut paper, guys. Like it's go time, sleep cards.
Yeah, exactly. Driving down to Kinko's. Yeah, spending 2 hours just hanging out with scissors. Yeah, we did lots of that. We are responsible for the destruction of a whole rainforest, I'm sure. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, I do have a curious question, because you mentioned some of the expansions. And when I'm just going to speak like from the view of a backer, because that's how I've seen it. And that's why I said to the guys, I was like, bro, this game is sick. We need to speak to these guys about this. You know, I want to get these guys up because it looks awesome. But the one thing was, you know, when you're looking at a game that you've never played and you always think trying to compare it to something, you know, to find some sort of relatability. And I was like, I was trying to see, I was like, okay, so is it going to be like a Netrunner? Is it going to be like a Magic the Gathering? Then I saw expansion boxes like, okay, so is it going to be like a Dominion type thing? I still was like trying to find my feet on what I could see, how it's coming out. Have any of those been like an influence, or did you find there's been any games that you would relate it somewhat in the field park of?
Oh gosh, that's such a great question. we thought about that and looked at different methods of releasing content in depth. You know, we looked at Netrunner, we looked at, of course, like Magic and Legend of the Five Rings and Arkham Horror LCG, and I think where we landed, I mean, we're kind of interesting because, I mean, we are a small team that's doing this as, like, you know, more or less a labor of love. And so the one thing that we're not is we're not a, you know, 30-person core development Netrunner team that can put out, like, three large expansions every year, you know? And so I think our expansion model is... We knew we wanted to do two things, right? We didn't want to have any random content. We didn't want to do any blind draws on boosters or anything like that, because you know, much to our detriment, because it probably is, we just didn't really find that like a good, strong ethical model. We didn't want to like put that kind of curse on the game that we're just going to basically try and tap into that, you know, psychological trap of gambling and all the rest. But I think the way we ended up approaching expansions and the way that we'll potentially approach expansions in the future going forward is that basically we make a lot of content and then we try to figure out the best way to deliver it. And at the end of the day, that's a little bit of a cop-out answer, but I don't think we're on a train of, okay, well, we're on a schedule of X many expansions a year of this exact form factor, so we can start that kind of journey. Instead, what we're going to do is, you know, people really love Singularity. That's awesome. We're going to work hard on making cool stuff. And as we get cool stuff done, we're going to try to think about the most intelligent way to deliver it to people so they get the best play experience and the best value. And that means a few weird things for people who are more used to TCGs, right? I mean, our releases might not be on a regular schedule. They might not all be in the same exact form factor. But the one thing that we will do is we're always going to commit to trying to make sure that whatever the form factor is and whatever the schedule for the releases are, it's all ultimately like deeply in service of the very best play experience we can deliver. You know, rather than just adhering to a very particular schedule or rather than adhering to a very particular form factor. So at the end of the day, I don't think we look like any of the other TCGs, partly because of who we are and partly because of just trying to figure out how it can all make sense. But I do think that for Singularity, the release model is going to be awesome for people who love it.
And that's the thing. I mean, it's always a curious thing when someone's releasing a game like Singularity. You know, you've got your massive names out there, Dominion, you know, Magic, Netrunner, Arkham, and you're always thinking, how's it going to scale? How's it going to fare against these big? Is it going to be the new big game? Is it going to fare up to that? But at the same time, like, I mean, my own personal experience with, say, Netrunner, I love it. I could never get anyone to play it because it's a pain to teach.
I understand that deeply as a fellow Netrunner fan, so speaking like, directly to me. Yeah.
So it's like, how do you think that Singularity is going to fare up to, if I, let's say I have a core game group and I have someone who's just like, you're a general medium gamer, they like some games, how do you think they'll fare if we say, hey, I've got this game called Singularity, let me teach it you? Do you think it's going to end up being like as heavy as, say, some of the heavy TCGs, or do you think it'll be more approachable?
Well, you know, I'd pitch that to you, having just played it last week. I mean, I've lost a little bit of perspective on that, but I do know that we played a good amount of Netrunner, Legend of the Five Rings, like more of kind of just the weighty heavy hitters. And I think a major, major focus for us was to not have something that complicated to like learn and suss out, because like Netrunner, I adore Netrunner. Netrunner is very, very difficult to teach for a variety of reasons. I mean, one of them is that it just has a different arbitrary term for every single like possible mechanic it could have, right? You know, so not only are you trying to teach what things do, you're trying to like get people to memorize all kinds of esoteric like language around them, right? I think Singularity is much, much easier to learn. And I think in a lot of ways it's easier to learn than something like Magic the Gathering, because we don't have like an action stack that needs to be unfolded, right? Like the stack in Magic is always kind of a learning hurdle for new people. But by the same token, we do have some things that are a little bit of a hurdle. I mean, I think one is that you either love deck construction or you don't, you know, and this is kind of a game for people who like deck construction and like building decks. I mean, there are ways to, we're actually working on a set of draft rules now and some ways to play it for not, but I think the deepest joy there is if you like to really get in and build your own decks. And then I also think, interestingly enough, like highly tuned decks and well, I don't know if that's that different. Actually, I'm going to take that back. I was going to say highly tuned decks and Singularity can really tear up like introductory or kind of not carefully constructed decks. But then I think back to like my Magic and Netrunner experiences. I'm like, okay, that's pretty par the course. I don't think that's that different per se. So I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question. But...
No. And you know, I think a factor from my own personal experience with Singularity that I think helps in this, if you just compare, like, we haven't really talked much about the artwork because obviously your graphic designer is not with us, but I really like how clear it is. Like, if you compare it to some of the Netrunner cards, especially the older Netrunner cards, bro, it is just like, they make it hard. They make it harder than it needs to be. But how clear everything is on the Singularity cards, I think that, because sometimes you just pick up a card and you're thinking, what does it do? It tells you what it does. Yes. Rather than like, some really complicated thing, you know.
I'll tell you what, I will pass that on to Al, because if anything got a lot of iteration, more than else, really, those card templates, holy cow. Yeah, you know, we kind of live by certain rules in just the visual presentation of cards. Like, we have a hard limit on the amount of text that we allow a rule to be, you know, we're never going to shrink the text like in Magic where it's going to go down to like 0.25 font to fit a big rule box. Right. And so, but those are useful kind of constraints and barriers to have because they stop rules from getting a little too gnarly and a little too intense. And there's so much design space left to explore, but, it makes me happy that you notice that, because I think that's something that we worked really hard towards, is just clarity, conciseness of language, making sure things are as clear in a user experience perspective as they possibly can be. And that's something that we still have a little bit of improvement on. I mean, we're working on the visual clarity of the damage symbols and their differentiation from one another. We're going to do some more there because we received some feedback. So.
Just going to say, when I was playing yesterday, the iconography, once I got the iconography down, I was all good after that. So yeah, once that was, I it'd be interesting working with more the deck construction, because that's the one element I haven't touched, and how, because it's the brands on the left-hand side, is it, that they can all kind of correlate together. So yeah, I thought it was really interesting how it all kind of pieced up.
And that also makes me really happy to hear, because it's something that, even though we have deck construction, we really tried to figure out a way to make it very easy to do comparatively to other games with deck construction. Like, if you're getting into Magic the Gathering for the first time and you're trying to build a deck, it can just be overwhelming. You're just like, oh my god, there are 23,000 cards, and like, I can have one or five colors, and I've got to somehow figure out like a ratio of a mana base, and on and on and on. Singularity is pretty easy, because the way it usually goes is you're like, this character looks cool, I want to use them, right? And that defines a faction for you. And then you go and you find some other characters, like, these characters look cool. And then each of those characters can only use a small subset of cards defined by their brands. So you're kind of handheld through a decision-making process during deck construction every step of the way, where you're like, okay, well, I'm going to choose a faction, I'm going to choose characters, and that's going to really narrow the scope of what I could put on each of these individual characters. And so you don't feel like you're just lost in a sea of content. Hopefully, this is the hope, you know, we'll see how people feel. But rather that you have a small set of meaningful choices that kind of narrow based on whatever characters and factions you're thematically in love with, right? So
that's really cool. It kind of reminds me of like the fighting games of the past, because I was always told, like, when you pick up a, like, say Street Fighter or something, the first thing you should go in is, like, just pick the character that you like the look of.
Yes. Just ignore 100%.
Everything else. And I think that's a great way to go into a game. Yeah.
You nailed it. Yeah. As a fellow fighting game fan, like, that's 100% it, right? Like, just pick someone who looks cool, who kind of speaks to you, and then there's kind of a chain of decisions past that, but they're not hard decisions, you know. It's just like pretty solid. Yeah, you got it.
I mean, unless you're playing like high level gaming, I don't think you really mind. Yeah. Cool. Another question I thought we could ask. What has been the highlight of the journey overall for you so far?
Yeah, for each person as well. I'd love to hear the separate thoughts on that.
Yeah.
I think for me, and I know to a degree I'm Logan, Matt, and I'll definitely share this sentiment. Preparing for the campaign, we were so excited to get this out in front of people. We did a lot of work up front to make sure everything ran as smoothly as possible. But there is something about the camaraderie of the night before. We're just working ceaselessly for 10 months up until this campaign to make this thing great, and literally down to the wire. We've been up for many hours, and I think the four of us were really excited to deliver something. I think that camaraderie is something I'm just never gonna forget. All of us kind of down in the trenches.
Putting a really wonderful and kind spin on that, like, two all-nighters we did, where we're both, like, eyes fried and, just in an absolute delirium of sleep deprived, But yeah, that was really fun and special. I think that's right on point. You nailed it.
What about you, Logan?
Yeah, I think, it's such an amazing question. What I am so, so proud of is the design work that we've done over just, right, an unbelievable amount of time. And to just think of, like to what Matt was saying earlier, just the iterations, like, when I think about it, it's just like, oh my gosh. And I'm really proud of what we've created and how, in creating something that is different and changes what people think of as a card game. And that is what I'm so excited once it gets out into folks' actual hands and to really see that, as people dive into it and talk more, I'm really excited to hear their thoughts on that. But I'm really, really proud of and grateful of the experience of going through the process of designing this stuff and just building on, right, over years and years, and then seeing where it's landed.
And then I'm so excited to hear what Matt would have to say after hearing both of you's comments now.
Oh gosh, well I think it's interesting because building games, in my experience, has kind of been. I'll speak to Singularity in particular. I think the thing I really love about Singularity and the highlight of the journey is that it's been a really good excuse to hang out with people I love and do something really meaningful with those people, I mean, at the end of the day, Singularity is a really cool game, but being able to work with amazing people on it and then play it with amazing people and have amazing people get excited about it, it's really just like been this great excuse to be around wonderful people. That's what it kind of boils down to. So it feels like this is just kind of in some ways background to a lot of really wonderful people experiences. And so that's the highlight for me, is that it's just a good excuse to hang out with people I like and do stuff with people I like. And that's kind of games in general, right?
I think that's such a great comment, because that's something I definitely think that here at Board Gamer World, especially, we see a lot from the board gaming community, that, it's not about, like, whether or not something is super economically viable. They just enjoy doing it. They enjoy doing it, and they enjoy doing it with friends, you know. It's the same, like Board Gamer World was just founded on friends that wanted to make it happen. So
yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, after this, we'll probably go and play some board games as
well. Yeah, it's perfect. You know, and that's, yeah, you got it. Exactly.
That's kind of the key, right? Coming to the conclusion of everything, we would wanting to kind of speak to you on what you have as future plans for Arctothorpe. So we know like the next 12 months, probably even 24 months, it's mostly going to be involved in like actually the realization of the GameFound campaign. But thinking going, say, 2-3 years forward, where do you think Arctothorpe might be?
We're all really invested in and love the process of making games. And so like continuing to make games is definitely on our horizon. And that exists kind of outside the considerations of even Arctothorpe, you know. I mean, it's just like I don't think we could stop if we tried. So we keep, but I mean, the interesting thing is that Arctothorpe has been a lot of things before Singularity. It did a lot of like VR. We did like a Sherlock Holmes VR game and on and on. I think for Singularity, we just want to kind of see what the reception is. I will say that if the reception is pretty good and Singularity, it looks like people are loving Singularity, they want more Singularity, there's a lot more Singularity. So
I like that as an answer.
Yeah,
that's a good answer.
Yeah. So if it does well, I mean, we have spreadsheets of stuff that we're really excited to explore, and there's already resources being put together for potential future products. So I think at this point we're just trying to keep our heads down and really like make sure that this first launch really goes well. But if people like Singularity, we like Singularity too, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, not gonna lie, you joked about something earlier, but if it came out as a future, you've already got a backer. It's if you ended up making it as a tabletop RPG, and you made like if you made a book for an RPG campaign, yeah, because I've been looking for a good cyberpunk one for ages, and I'm just like, oh, I don't know. But if Singularity was an RPG campaign, all right.
I'll tell you what, that actually is awesome to hear, because we have semi-seriously kicked that around in the past. That is definitely in the space of things that we're kind of excited to explore. So
well, you've already done the world building, so it's just expanding on it.
Yeah, well, and there's such a great excuse to get more beautiful art in front of people too, you know. Exactly. So anyways, it'd be fun. I think that'd be great. And I think the whole team loves that space as well, just exploring that side of the narrative and doing that kind of writing. So yeah, as non-committal, we'll see what happens.
No, we wouldn't expect anything, you know. You can't commit too much, but it's cool that there's some it's cool just to see the passion that you have. So I think anyone that's totally hyped for Singularity so far, just from seeing your passion and hearing it, we'll just feel so confident that the product they're going to receive has had just a ton of love and care gone into it. And any ongoing support that they have, it's totally backed by the designers themselves, because they are their own consumers, and that's always a good sign.
That, we're really proud to say that.
Yeah. Thank you, Jake.
I think that, thank you. That's like one of those things where I think if at any point any of us stopped liking playing Singularity, we wouldn't be sending it out. Here we are 5 years later, and it still blasts.
So. Wow. Any final questions from you?
I've got a personal one each, just kind of unrelated, I thought I'd ask. Except Singularity, if you could only pick one card game or board game, what would be your go-to?
Ooh, that's tough.
Card game or really board game? Tricky. Oh my gosh.
Oh, I know what yours is, Matt. Come on. Wow.
What? Wow, that's impressive. I know what math is gonna be. That's really impressive. Wait, so, well, then Lance, you should, what is mine?
I was going to say shadows, given your...
Oh.
Maybe that's a departure from the card game space, but...
No, that's fascinating. So I love Shadows of Brimstone. I own a ton of Shadows of Brimstone. You know, that game is incredibly fun, and I absolutely adore it, but also it's such a monster and such a beast. I don't know if it would be the one for me. You got to have an 8-foot by 10-foot table to even begin to think about playing it, you know. But I don't know. What about you, Logan? Go for it.
Yeah, it's such an interesting question. And Matt, you said that it could be either a board game or a card game.
Yeah, I'm open to any. Yeah,
because I feel like when my mind factors in is like, okay, well, like, how? What's a game that I can reliably find people to play with? Because I think for me, right, like, I definitely go through phases of what type of game I like. Like, it'd be like, oh, this is my main game, you know, and then it goes onto something else. I think I would probably, if I could only play one, it would probably have to be Rising Sun, because it has a lot of elements I really like. It has a serious like that politicking and social aspect. I've played a lot of it, but then also has just, you know, beautiful minis and it's area control, and there's a lot of different elements to it. So that would be my pick. Yeah.
Very cool. Nice. I still need to give that a go. So.
Oh, you have to.
Yeah, you piqued my interest.
Do you know, the only time we got that on the table, we were at an expo. So the UKGE, which is like the biggest one in the UK. And they have this whopping great hall that's just tables and tables and tables. And we had been smashing games out like all day. And then one of our other friends was like, all right, let's get Rising Sun. Started setting it all up. And I was like, do you know what? I'm kind of a little burnt. That was my one and only opportunity, and I flaked on it.
Oh, that's brutal. Yeah, it's definitely the kind of game where, like, you got to go into it being prepared for the experience. Like, everybody's buying into the experience. That's how I have a group of friends, or like a subset of board gamer friends that, like, are way into it. So whenever we get together and meet, you know, it's all different places across the country, we play Rising Sun. But it's... It takes a certain kind of person to do that. So
nice. Lance, what would you say is yours?
I would say if I can totally break the question and pick two, because they're wildly different. I love social deduction games. I have a huge friend group that plays them. So Secret Hitler, I've been playing it since I was 15. Love it. Love that game. So would recommend it. Pretty simple. But on the other side, yeah, Matt, it's Root. I love Root by Leader Games. It's a divisive game. Some people love it, some people hate it, but
I can't believe Tim isn't here, man.
Yeah.
Like, our graphic designer, we have this ongoing joke now on almost all of our podcasts when Root comes up, because he just loves that game.
There you
I
go.
Think the guy pretty much just worships that game. So if he was here, man.
Yeah, I love Root as well. Yeah, it's such a great game. In fact, he's got another game coming out soon, I think.
Yeah.
We both backed it, Lance and I.
Oh, Arcs.
Yes, Arcs, that's it, that's yes. It.
Yeah, yeah, because we were chatting all about that on one of the other episodes. So, yeah, if there's anything coming out from that designer, Tim's going to tell us, because he knows. Oh, man. Yeah, that was a good question. I like that one. Cool. Well, we've been really glad to be able to host having you, and we're really hoping that anyone that's been listening has been able to get to see a little bit behind the curtain, get to see the designers themselves, and perhaps some like questions they've had, or any like worries about, you know, have they backed something that has been playtested? I think all of that has been absolutely squashed. Like, I think anyone could be so confident in their backing of Singularity, and especially all of what's going to come with it as well. So I mean, here from Board Gamer, at least, like, we're so thankful that you've took out the time to come and share with us your story about Singularity.
Cool. It was such a blast, you guys. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
thank you for the opportunity. This has been just a wonderful time and really, yeah, a real pleasure. So thank you.
Same here. We loved it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, heck, it's not all, every day you get the designer of a game praise you on how you played a faction. So.